IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 32 of the Killing It Podcast. And Ryan is back with us all the way from, where were you?
I was originally in Bangkok, Thailand, and then in Chiang Mai, Thailand. I have to highly endorse going on a visit there, both the south and the north of that country. Spectacular experience up there. Really enjoyed the travel. I must say, however, the day that it was the last week of October, and it was 113 degrees outside because of the humidity and the heat index. That was a little bit less than pleasant.
That's not cold. Well, it's really brutal.
And as the locals, I asked the local, I was like, is it usually like this? And in very broken English, they explained to me, this is not normal.
Okay. No. All right. So a little abnormal there to at least makes you feel better that it's not like always like that. And you just walked into it and didn't know.
Yeah, exactly. It is like that in July. It's not like that in October, but it was still absolutely spectacular. If you have never had a chance to go, allow me to give you an endorsement.
Very cool. Nice. So, Dave, you're back in the real world. In fact, you've already gone off and done a conference, and then you watched a baseball game of some kind.
Well, you know, there was so you and I were in Australia, and then I flew back and watched the game 7 of the World Series with my Washington Nationals, who I've been cheering for since they came to town. I watched while the night before IT Nation really sort of kicked off. Did IT Nation, and then was back here in DC, flew back just in time for the parade, so had partied with hundreds of thousands of my closest friends all in red yesterday as we celebrated the city's first World Series win in 95 years.
So, wow.
So, slightly monumental.
Own paraphernalia that has the year and the World Series champs and all that.
I have been shopping this afternoon and have a very large truckload in my cart on MLB Shop that shall be shipping shortly.
And that's all new gear. Always on sale. Sometimes you get a t-shirt for only $100.
It's so incredibly well priced, all of that gear. Yeah, I'm going to spend a little too much on that, but I am a baseball fan number one, which has been my love since they come back to town, and it's been a fun time to be a DC fan.
Well, I hope to go back next year just for you.
I appreciate that. Hey, we had the Caps, then we had the Mystics take it all, we had the Nats take it all. This is they're calling it the District of Champions. So we're enjoying it. And you enjoyed some time down in Australia, didn't you?
Oh, I had such a great time. So we did the conference in Adelaide, and then I went up to Morton Island just off Brisbane and hung out with Amy and Missy and just relaxed and had a very, very good time. Actually just got home Friday late and I'm going Monday to New York for the Channel Pro event. So,
and I will see you there. I will be in New York for that event.
So I'm barely in this time zone, and then there's this time shift, and then there's another time shift, and it's like, yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
Time zones when it starts.
And this should drop the morning before that show. So if anybody is listening to this and wants to come find either of us while we're all in New York, please reach out, let us know, and say hi and tell us listen to the show.
Yeah, actually, go to Channel Pro Network. If you're listening to this, say, Tuesday morning or mid-morning, there's a reception Tuesday night in Newark. So just come see us.
Come find us.
Yeah, exactly. All righty. So with all that, so let's just do a quick roundup. I want to make sure everybody has a way to get a hold of you on Twitter. And Ryan, you just said that you're trying to spend more time on Twitter. So how do we get a hold of you?
So admittedly, I am the least advanced or the least capable person on this conversation on the Twitter machine. My handle is at Ryan Morris 303. There's very few original tweets from me out there, but I have been actually using it for research purposes in the last couple of weeks, and it has proved very fruitful. So I think I might actually go back.
So anybody who wants Ryan to see something, tweet him a good article, and now now he'll get all the information he should need.
Exactly. And I am with kicking and screaming and all of that, I am actually getting prepared to start to send messages out into the world on the Twitter machine. So I promise to suck less soon.
All right. And DJ Dave.
You can find me on Twitter at DJ Dave ET. I've had that for so long. It's the leftover initials from my MSP is what I always tell people when they ask it. And you can find my podcasts at MSP Radio News. So if you're looking for the business of tech, we release all of the episodes come out on Twitter there.
Very cool. And I am at Carl Polichuk, common spelling. So
so easier to find.
Yes. So beautiful thing about the internet is if you get close, it figures it out.
It figures it out. So why don't we kick it off? Because Ryan, you found something that was following up on all of our drone conversations that you wanted to share with all of us. What was this article that you found?
So think of it this way, right? We talk about drones reasonably frequently on here because I think it's a fascinating technology, but also because we forecast that it's going to have very practical applications, and we're starting to see the evidence of that. So this article that I came across, actually, it gave me not just a woohoo kind of an experience, but also a real example of where the innovation I think is going to be coming from. So here's the basic scenario. The United States Navy just completed their first ever shore-to-ship or shore-to-submarine delivery of actual parts to a submarine that was underway off the island of Oahu in Hawaii. So the way that this came to be, somebody was thinking about this. You know, they enjoyed drones as a concept. They were thinking about this as a potential practical application, and a submarine captain had the idea of, you know, if I could eliminate just that last mile, literally, of our journey into the harbor, dock, get supplies, move back out, and get underway again, not only would we save a tremendous amount of time, but literally millions of operational dollars. So he had this idea. He mentioned it to some people. A few of the sailors got together and they got in touch with some folks at the local university there in Oahu, and they started to brainstorm on how you could do this. They did a little bit of practicing, and once it became reasonably practical, they took it to the Navy, and the Navy said, okay, but we're not going to fund this thing at all. What we're going to do is require you to do this on your own time. Sailors who do not make enough money to begin with took their own time, free time on the weekend, to go and volunteer to be trained as both the drone pilots on land and the folks who would do the catching at sea. And they made this thing work. They've made it safe for a nuclear submarine and actually be able to deliver supplies to a submarine underway. What a fantastic idea. From
the total cost is less than the cost of a toilet seat or a hammer.
Exactly.
At least in the military. Now, admittedly, they have special requirements, so right. I will kudos those prices. That, you know, so this is, I mean, besides super cool, this, for me, what was jumping out to me in this conversation is how good ideas that originate within the organization need to be fostered and encouraged. Like, yep. That's just really, really cool that they're given the opportunity to figure that out and to implement it. You know,
now that I know both of you guys have read the Innovator's Solution, right? The ability to recognize, hey, there's something good that we could do here. And instead of squishing it and saying, doesn't fit within our standard operating procedures, there's some flexibility there, which actually is kind of cool within the military, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
To be able to say, and my guess is, they've been chattering about, hey, this stuff is coming, so figure out how to use it.
See, and that's exactly the point, right? Of all the people in the whole wide world to say, let's break with our standard operating procedures and do something innovative, for that to come from Karl Polachek, that is a commentary that all of you need to appreciate, right? If you don't know Karl and the SOP world, you will soon learn that. But see, to Dave's point, that's exactly where the innovation comes from. It's not a vendor came up with a product that could meet my standard managed services package and terms and conditions, and I could deploy it within there. It was an inkling of an idea, and somebody figured it out. Now, we were recently at an event it was back in the summer. Dave, you were on a panel talking about emerging technologies, and I won't say who made this comment, but somebody made a comment that said, why do I care about drones? I can never imagine caring about drones because I'm a managed service provider, and that's not something that I manage, so I'm literally never going to pay attention to that. And my response to that was, did you just say out loud that you believe that everybody that ever needed to own a computer already owns one, and the total marketplace is going to be like 2 or 3 dozen across North America? Innovation happens, and it comes from underneath. It does not come from on high. And I think that's where we're going to start to see, to make it slightly more tangible, right? Not just a drone conversation, but a mobile smart device conversation. I think in that world, the Internet of Things is going to come. And if we are not paying attention to the small innovations, we will be yesterday's dinosaurs that get left behind.
Three quick notes. First of all, on drones, if you haven't heard it, go listen to last week's show.
Yeah, we talked about it some then.
Second, I love the fact, if you actually go check the article we're going to link to, love the picture. This is a drone that has chosen the technology of dropping from a rope, which is kind of cool. So in terms of delivery, that's cool. Third is this whole movement to drones it's not coming. It's here. So you can choose not to do it, but just make sure that's a conscious choice.
Well, or figure out how it affects you and your customers. It doesn't necessarily, again, have to be that you are the one delivering it. You just want to understand what are the implications.
Right, and if it's technology they're buying, help them figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, and be open to cool things, right? I think that's what I keep saying to people when I'm out at speaking gigs and I'm talking to audiences. I think right now in our industry, there's more cool shit going on than we have seen in an entire generation.
Absolutely.
We're just arguing about speeds and feeds anymore. Let's go change the world.
True enough. All righty, Dave. So you want to read this note? We love the mailbag, right? We're going to like rustle around in the mailbag. Brian,
we get to rustle in the mailbag. Brian Daugherty, thank you for your email. Thank you for your idea. So Brian writes in, idea. I would love to hear you all speak to some of the emerging technologies such as blockchain and even more specifically, Bitcoin SV, BSV, and the creation of the MetaNet. Keep up the amazing work, Brian. All right. So first off, we all had homework. So we ended up having to go dig in and figure this one out. Karl, why don't you kick us off a little bit? Because you've done some thinking around blockchain already in this area.
Yeah. So I've been taking some classes and, trying to school up on the specifics of blockchain and how it all works. And we're actually going to put links to the big, providers, which are, as you can imagine, IBM, Azure, Amazon, and Google, right? Shocking, I know. But they all have free platforms, and Intel has a platform. There's so many places that you can go learn about blockchain, and actually they all have ways that you can learn programming. Some of them have a graphical user interface. Some of them are more like, C++ and that sort of thing. So, but in terms of the topic, I like the way Brian divides it in half. So there is, on one hand, blockchain generically, and on the other hand, Bitcoin specifically. I do have to say, the specifics of Bitcoin going to a higher level of encryption and becoming more difficult, blah, 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 I couldn't care less. I have to say, in my personal opinion, Bitcoin is used by drug dealers and ransomware villains and bad guys. And so far, it's not replacing any legitimate ways for you to exchange money across borders. The goal is to be able to exchange money without having some arbiter in the way, like a bank or a government.
So let me throw this out there then, Carl, because I'm actually going to take the other side of this, not specifically on Bitcoin, but I want to follow up to some comments that I've made around Libra and that project. So obviously Libra is theoretically another kind of crypto coin that Facebook is working on. And where my head's at on this is I'm with you on, I don't think we necessarily need another banking system, for example, in a developed country. But I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of being able to serve what they call the underbanked.
Sure.
Those that don't have access to the same level of financial institution resources, but now have mobile devices, now have the ability to interact with apps. Like, there is some value in those marketplaces of these cryptocurrencies. Now, whether or not that's Bitcoin or some of the stuff related around that, I want those to get bought out a little bit.
I would say, so Orange is kind of, it's like the phone company for most of Africa. They're actually doing this thing. I can loan you 7 cents, right?
Sure.
And it's easy and it's fast. And I don't have to have the technology on my phone to have my own little Bitcoin wallet or Libra wallet or whatever.
Sure, right.
It's sort of like there's this low technology solution that's already out there. And at the high end, just since we talked about Libra, like we talked about the announcement,
oh, sure.
It's already falling apart.
It's falling apart. And by the way, my statement on Libra was Facebook is the wrong person to put it together.
Right.
But I think there's an idea there, and I've made the prediction, and I think here, and I'll make it again, I think somebody like Amazon will do a good job with that. Because, for example, it makes a lot of sense for an Amazon to have this ability to serve those markets with a more stable currency. Now, I'm going to differentiate also between these ideas of like Bitcoin where it's its own currency versus something like a Libra or what Libra should be, where it's linked to real world currencies. And this is more like an enablement of that. So right. If we're down at the specific currency level, that's sort of my take on where this is.
Well, and I will take it where I think, again, up out of the currency conversation back into the platform and the controlled or automated identity type of a conversation, right? When you take it out of the currency world and you put blockchain back into industrial applications, I think that in a manufacturing world, in a distribution world, in an individual entrepreneur's getting credit for the things they create kind of a world, I think that there are some really practical applications. And in fact, what I've noticed, and when you look at these platforms, that is where our big brothers in technology are kind of pointing the whole conversation, right? I think that the whole blockchain conversation is not going to wind up being just about currency, although, and I mean, you know, we've all noticed that the first people to commercialize any of these new technologies tends to be, you know, the criminals and the pornographers and whatever.
Right.
And then the rest of the world catches up and figures out a use case for it. I'm absolutely convinced that what we're going to see in these environments is a groupthink innovation that comes up with some very practical industrial applications for blockchain. And those who do the original thinking and writing, unlike other areas of innovation, the positive spin on this is when you invent something within a blockchain world, it is blockchained and you get credit for it and you are identified as the original creator, different from a lot of the open, you know, stack and the software development world, right? I think that there are some very tangible things there, and that's something that we really ought to be paying attention to.
I actually was, and in researching, because I did my homework coming into this, there were actually sort of two elements of really interesting applications of blockchain where you come at it from very different approaches data-wise. The first, Ryan, you've just sort of talked about where it's a ledger where we can find the particular people that have inserted information into, you know, in there, and we can track the whole piece. The other application of blockchain that really intrigues me is this idea of being able to place information on it and have the information itself be verifiable, but not traced back necessarily to the submitter. The example use case here that to give everyone like to wrap their head around it is, if you want to take five people and compare their salaries and find out to make sure that everyone is being paid the same without revealing the identities of the people, you actually really can't do that right now in any kind of safe, secure way, because the data is really linked to the person. But the ability, by using blockchain style technology, you can actually submit anonymized data into the black box, analyze the data without link to the people, and then be able to make determinations of that data. So it exposes data in really new, interesting ways. We can do, so for example, we can start saying we want to publish certain pieces of our information or our identity or such into this world where we can manage who gets access to what and how, and whether or not it's even anonymized, allowing for much more secure data analysis and data investigation.
Well, it also allows you to have a trusted relationship among people who don't trust each other.
Exactly.
Right? And literally, not just like banks or whatever, but governments who have some agreement, right? And there's an auditable, you know, chain of events, and you say, okay, this is what it was. Everybody agreed that this was the truth on this day. I think the low fruit for IT service providers is to help clients develop those ledger applications that you mentioned earlier. I think this is the ultimate compliance tool, that here's what happened on this day. This person did this. Here was the state. We all agree on that. Stamp it, next. And right, every little interaction forever is permanently part of the blockchain.
Yep.
So, yeah, and so within the world of security, you know, we grew up in a world where everything we did was logged somewhere. And, you know, not too long ago, somebody went, wait a minute, we should probably analyze all those logs and figure out not just, you know, the implications of what happened, but the metadata associated with that. From my days back in the database infrastructure world, the analytics of metadata that are that have always been around the database world, moving into the security world, that has given us a lot more intelligence. And if you could take that to the ledger world, to the industrial world, to the international trade relations world, I think that has some fascinating implications. And it's not, like you're saying, Carl, it's not rocket science to learn to develop in these worlds, and the applications are going to be mostly based on data that already exists. It just needs to be verified and trusted.
I'm also going to we're kind of done with the topic, but I'm going to throw a link to my friend Patrick Schwartzbeger's book, Anarchy Inc., where he talks about blockchain and kind of the evolution of an era in which we have decentralized authority.
Yeah, it's a great book. I read it as well. It gives you a good sense of the issues and opportunities here.
And anything we can do to increase trust in our world today, probably a good thing.
Cool. All righty. So topic number three, we don't really have a link per se, but we want to talk a bit about mastermind groups. I've spoken to several groups in several countries, actually, this year about just sort of casually talking about how mastermind groups have helped me out. And so we want to talk a bit about this. I think all of us have been part of either a mastermind group, a peer group, you know, something like that. And there's differences between those. And so at least for me, I belong to a couple different mastermind groups, and they're phenomenal for me because they allow me to get to know people at a level where I trust them, and I can take my problems to people who I know are really smart about certain things. They're business people. They understand some of the challenges I'm going through. And so let's say there's five or eight people in a group. When somebody's giving me advice, everybody else is taking notes because they have similar challenges. whether it's about marketing or hiring or, you know, how you put together a bundle, whatever it might be. And so it's a great way for people to share advice in a group. And the longer they stay together, the easier it is for them to bring problems to one another because you begin to understand the other person's business.
Totally. And I, you know, just for everybody who's not familiar with the term, Carl particularly likes the term mastermind group. You know, it's a group of advisors that work with you as a business owner to give you advice. They can go anything from an informal group of people you call on demand to a very formalized programmatic experience, oftentimes looked at like from a peer group perspective. And there are several peer group organizations that focus on the IT channel that we could use as an example. Taylor Business Groups out there, HTG, which is now IT Nation Evolve, I think. Robin Robbins has her producers clubs that are particularly focused around marketing. There's a number of these groups out there that do this in a very formalized way. From a background perspective, I was heavily involved with HTG when I was a solution provider and helped set it up in Europe and was a member. So I've always really believed in these kinds of ideas. The accountability is what's important that when it comes to this, and it's whatever you need to make yourself accountable around it. A structured peer group often is really great for driving it, particularly when you don't know people or don't have those to rely on. I think the farther you get into your business maturity, the less you'll need external accountability because it ends up being pretty internalized pretty fast, the accountability. And I think I've moved more to an informal network of people that provide insight and information that I then return the favor with.
Well, and the functional purpose, right? Like, why would you do this thing? Well, it's not exactly a new concept, right? Businesses have boards of directors for a reason. There are people with operational responsibility who have a tendency to know everything about the day-to-day operations and get so close to the weeds of their situation that they don't see other points of view, other perspectives, and sometimes just a word of advice from somebody who understands what you're doing and says, by the way, did you think about X? Every one of us has had the experience where somebody makes that comment and you think, boy, what a clown. How come I didn't see that coming? Well, that's the human condition. The more focused you become on the things that you do every single day, the less likely it is that you are going to see the emerging threat or the alternative approach, some creative spin that's not traditional, that's going to actually make all the difference. I think that there are some best practices, right? I agree with you, Dave. The fundamental best purpose for a peer group or a mastermind group is the combination of fresh new ideas that you hadn't thought of yourself and the accountability to follow through. Did you actually do what you said you were going to do? I think that one of the best practices that I've learned is to look for advice from outside of your own core industry. While there is value from people who do exactly what you do and can help you solve exactly the problem that you're trying to solve, I find that the best business thinking is the thinking that transcends a weird little niche, right? Just because it's true in our niche doesn't necessarily mean that that's proven business best practice. But if you've got people from other professional services and highly complex environments who can say, you know, I might not be an MSP, I might not be a technology solution provider, but I am a CPA, I'm an engineer, I run an ad agency, something like that. These people don't do what you do for a living, but they are closely related enough that their industries have probably thought about things that our insular thinking has missed. And that tends to open your mind and take you in places that will fast forward your
development. Yeah, it's good to have different kinds of groups. I mean, kind of what Ryan was just alluding to, there are mastermind groups that have a variety of people from a variety of industries. My local group in Sacramento, we meet once a month and we are all in completely different businesses. None of us do anything remotely close to each other. Now, when I was in HTG or Taylor Business Groups, I was in both of those. that was a peer situation where everybody does what I do, but they do it in a different city. Right? And,
right.
And as much as we all think that we do the same thing, oh my God, none of us do anything remotely similar to the others. Right.
Right.
Right. It's like, oh yeah. I do managed services. I only sell blocks of time. Like what? I never sell blocks of time. So, but it's helpful to know, and you know, in one case you have people from a variety of businesses. In another case, you have people who are all facing the same challenges in the same market at the same time with the same opportunities. Right. So there's a lot of value in both of those. There's also different kinds of peer groups. There are peer groups that are literally run by the other peers, and that gives you one flavor. And then there's peer groups that are kind of run by a coach, and Taylor Business Group is more like that. And so the advantage to the peers is literally everybody knows what everybody's other challenges are. The advantage to a coach is there's somebody who sees 50 different businesses at once instead of just the 8 who are in the room. So there's, you know, there's advantages and disadvantages to all of those. I would encourage everybody to figure out, if you're not in some kind of a mastermind group, find some people that you like, that you know, start with the ones in the industry, and just hold a Zoom meeting once a month.
Oh, totally. And you know, and I'm a huge with you in the same way. I absolutely believe in it. The one thing that I will always caution everybody about, and I mean this more as a very intellectual perspective on it, is you want to ensure that you're drawing from enough sources that you do not risk groupthink. If you only go to one collective group of, say, for example, IT business providers, and you only meet with that group, and that's the only group you're getting information from, it is possible over time to end up trending toward groupthink. And so it is important that you focus on having multiple sources to ensure that you don't do that. That's not to devalue the incredible importance of that sharing. It is simply to make sure that you're not doing it from only one set of sources and you end up running that risk.
Yeah, that's an exceptionally valuable point, because I do think that more than one point of view is the point. Right? Like, it's not just me thinking about my problems. There's a few people in my mastermind group. And then I might need to have more than one group of people to get slightly different points of view. I think that the trend toward groupthink is inevitable, and it is shockingly fast, because everybody is seeking certainty and reassurance, and everybody likes to be told, you know, Pat, you're doing fine. Don't worry about it. You're doing exactly what we're doing. And we don't necessarily think hard enough to find the real or the innovative solutions. More than one point of view is going to get you further than just that one point of view is going to do. Now, I will say, because this is, you know, having been around these things in the industry, having been a member, having been a coach, coaching at the executive and sales leader level is one of the services that we actually provide. And I do it not because that's what I thought I was going to grow up doing. I do it quite organically, because I benefit so much when other people can give me a trusted point of view in a coaching scenario, that it just, like, that happened in our business. And it's something that we've really kind of taken on as an organic growth opportunity. Everybody benefits from a coach. And sometimes that coach knows more about the subject than you do. And sometimes they don't need to know more about the situation.
Right.
Call you on your BS and say, you said you were going to do it. You didn't do it.
Right.
That's, you know, I remember when I was a kid playing sports, you know, the coach in the game usually wasn't there to teach me a new technique. He was there to call me on my BS.
And by the way, that's what my wife's there for too.
Best coach I have.
Very cool. All right. Well, sadly, we're basically out of time.
Well, you know, it's fun chatting with you. And again, thank you to Brian for submitting a topic. We do love hearing from our listeners. If you've got something you want us to riff on, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to go to the website and submit us contact. Find us on Twitter. Find us on all the spots that we have tweeted out, and send us your feedback. We'd love to talk more about listener ideas.
And we do have a form at killingit.smallbizthoughts.com. Of course, we'll put that link in the show notes. And that will do it for episode 32 of the Killing It,
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.